This is a Dauntless Media Collective podcast. Visit dauntless.fm for more content.
What is it you wanted me to reconcile myself to? I was born here almost 60 years ago. I'm not going to live another 60 years. You've always told me it takes time. It has taken my father's time, my mother's time, my uncle's time, my brother's and my sister's time, my niece's and my nephew's time. How much time do you want for your progress?
I hate you, naturally.
And I hate black people.
Things are going to get worse before they get better.
What is presented to me as an American does not look like me.
Because you're not allowed to be a black man in corporate America.
You give us a hard time for being white, being American, and being in control.
And when you live under a situation like that constantly, and then you ask me, you know, whether I approve of violence, I mean, that just doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, there's a lot of crazy stuff happening right now. And you know what? We need a space where we can debrief some of it and deconstruct. If you've been looking for a POC-centered podcast that engages with intersectionality, religion, critical race theory, and some hip-hop culture, then you need to check out Profane Faith. I'll be your host, Daniel White Hodge, and we go in every other week. So check us out wherever you find your podcasts, or check us out at whitehodgepodcasts.com to see what other platforms we're on. Cool? All right. Peace.
All right.
Okay. Welcome to the Thereafter Podcast, a place where we explore life on the other side of faith change.
We're here to break down the binaries, deconstruct the dualities, and wander through what it looks like to live in the gray.
In church, we were told that life after leaving would be a bitter wasteland of unfulfilling hedonism, but we've discovered quite the opposite.
There's actually a vibrant community of people on the other side of faith who are finding and co-creating space for hope and healing.
Come along as we explore the all too often uncharted expanse of evangelicalism, evolving faith, and the life thereafter. Haven't talked about because we didn't record last week, and I do kind of want to get your take. I know you probably saw this. I did not tell you in advance what I was going to bring up, but I think things are about
raw
to get a little
reaction.
Yeah, a little Driscoll-y here. It's like a weather, right?
We talking about men on poles?
Men on poles? Yes. Okay, I have some questions. So for folks that didn't see the chatter about it, there was a men's conference. What was it? The Stronger Men's Conference?
Is that the Stronger Men's Conference, which like everything men's conference, evangelicalism, like it's always like all like vaguely homoerotic. But this year they just like took it to another level.
Yeah, and okay, I need to back up a minute because did you watch The Righteous Gemstones?
I did.
Okay, so in the second season when they bring in like the strongman crew kind of thing,
yes.
I think people thought that was an exaggeration of something, but this really existed. Like I was at camp and had this group of men come and lift trucks and pull trucks with their teeth and do all kinds of, you know, for the Lord, lift like heavy weight lift. Did you see this happen?
They were called the Power Team. I'm pretty sure was what they were called, is the Power Team. Jordan Chesley, who was a guest on the first season of the pod from, I don't know, a music podcast. It was a weird outlier episode of this podcast where we interviewed a couple of buddies of mine who were hosts of a music podcast. But he talked about, he got saved at a Power Team like night at his church where they would like come and rip phone books in half for Jesus and like break cinder blocks with their foreheads and stuff. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was called the Power Team. And if you Google like evangelism Power Team evangelists or whatever, you'll find these dudes who are like oiled up for the Lord. And just like veins out in these like tank tops. It's a It's a real thing.
Okay, but apparently the 2024 version of this is the now the no shade against stripping, but the pole dancing and I don't even know. I honestly, like, I'm not even sure. I think they just had a performer. And actually, now that I'm thinking back on seeing the footage, it seemed like it was more like a Cirque du Soleil type of performance. And maybe Mark Driscoll added the stripping part of it or the pole dancing part of it.
There was a pole.
He, like, read that into it.
There was a pole. There was a portion where the man did take his shirt off and do some moves where he would, like, hold onto the pole and go, like, vertical, like a flag, right? Like, his body, you know what I'm saying, right? Like, and, like, swing himself around, like, holding himself, like, parallel with the ground by the pole, right?
So which it was supposed to be, like, which is pretty fucking hard to do.
it very hard to do. And, I mean, objectively very hot, you know? It did get me going, okay? Let's just be honest. It was pretty hot. And I don't know who booked this guy, but, like, I just imagine that anyone who does that for a living, like, has done some interesting things. Like, I don't know that this man is, like, a Christian performer. Maybe he is. I want to have him on the podcast. I'm very curious about him as a person. But
my understanding was that he had been a performer in, or had left his secular life to come and do this for Jesus. That's what I thought. Oh. I saw somewhere. I think it was some kind of, he had left something. Maybe he was previously a stripper or something like that, and now is coming and doing this for Jesus. But I guess my biggest question in the whole thing, and if you saw it play out, Mark Driscoll's trying to call it out on stage, said he had a Jezebel spirit, and the somebody called Mark Driscoll out and shut him down, and he was that whole thing was just kind of stopped. But my biggest question is, if you're somebody that's willing to call out Mark Driscoll, if you're somebody that's like, I'm not going to stand for this and that, why do you have him at your conference speaking? And also, like, within a week, Mark Driscoll's promoting his Jezebel Spirit book, right? So it's, like, all promotional. Like, and I'm like, part of me thinks maybe it was even contrived in the first place, the whole thing, to get it all there, you know? You never know. Like, it just, it's not, nothing's out of the question here.
It's quite possible that the whole thing was contrived, or at least maybe not on the pastor's part, because the pastor who called him out was the pastor of the host church putting on the event. So he was very much in charge of asking Mark to come to this event and speak. And from what I heard is he was getting, like, bomb threats, and there were threats coming in to him for what he said against Mark Driscoll. Apparently Driscoll fans got all hot and bothered about Mark getting kicked off stage and were apparently calling in bomb threats to this guy's church or threatening this guy's life or something, right? So I doubt this pastor was in on the deal, but it would not surprise me if Mark saw the lineup for the event and planned, you know, said, oh, I'm going to go to this and stage this whole thing, knowing kind of what was going to happen. That would not surprise me in the least.
Okay. Yes. And can I just say what is the mindfuck of these extremely conservative pro-lifers being like, I'm so upset with this that I'm going to threaten life on you because you kicked a pastor off the stage. It has the Moms for Liberty vibe. It has the whole, like, did you just see, like, Planet Fitness got a bunch of bomb threats because there was a person filming in bathrooms trying to film somebody that was transgender that was in the bathroom, and Planet Fitness was like, you filming in the bathroom, it violates our policy, and canceled their membership, and then they got bomb threats because they were defending the transphobia, right? And so these people that were giving bomb threats, like, can we just for a second recognize that maybe if you're upset about something, like, threatening with death is not the way? Like,
yeah. Well, and the interesting thing about that Planet fitness thing is like, I saw there's a trans creator. I don't know her name and I wish that I did. But she is a creator on TikTok and she works at Planet Fitness. And she was literally talking about how like it's a very trans friendly company and like they have been very explicit in their contract and in their policies about gender and locker rooms and, you know, all of these things like are clearly in the contract that you sign when you join the gym. And you know what else is in the contract? Not using cameras in the locker room. Like you signed the contract. Like you signed up for this. It's very laid out. This is not some new thing that they have decided to do. Don't film people. You are the weirdo. You are, and it's like this person filming in there trying to like accuse someone else of being this poor woman trying to just get changed. And you're like, oh, look, hey, I caught, you know, somebody being, she's changing. You're filming her. Like what the, regardless of what your ideas about gender or your ass backward ideas about, you know, gender critical ideology or whatever, this person's not bothering anyone doing anything. You're harassing them objectively.
Yes.
So, you know, you getting your membership revoked because you breached the contract you signed when you joined the gym, and for people to call in bomb threats. I mean, it's not surprising to me. These pro-life people have never been pro-life outside of the womb. Right? Like it has always been about controlling women's bodies. It's never been about saving lives or because all of their ideologies, all of their policies, once a person is born, are vehemently like not conducive to life or helping that human survive.
It just reminds me of how backwards it was. And I know we're kind of wandering. I guess that's just my vibe today. But how backwards it is that they co-opted the My Body, My Choice to not wear masks. Yeah, which would have protected people's lives. And they're like taking the it's just the whole thing. I was like, Anyway, I know we have an episode, an interview coming up that we have been sitting on for a little while because we had some, you know, responding to other things, episodes come up, and also our schedules have prevented us from recording every single week and putting out episodes, but we're so excited about this one, and I yes. think if there's, unless there's anything else, we'll just dive right into that interview with Phil Drysdale.
Let's jump in. Phil's been somebody who I've loved for a long time in this space, and it was so great to be able to sit down with him. Excited to share this conversation with all of you. Let's get into it.
Welcome back to another episode of the Thereafter Podcast. We have Cortland. Say hi.
Hi, I'm here, and we have a guest here. Phil Drysdale is here, and I'm super excited about it. Phil, welcome to the show.
It's good to be here. Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
So we just want to, you're somebody that has been on my radar for a really long time, and I'm so excited to have this conversation because we have been talking about having you on the show for a while. And just to kind of kick us off, if you want to give us a little window into how you ended up in the deconstruction space or whatever the kids are calling it these days.
Whatever label.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I grew up in a very fundamental Christian world. My parents were pastors, and I did Christianity hard. Probably wasn't that intent really early on, but I did Christianity really hard. Fast track many years, a few decades, and I'm traveling around the world, speaking in conferences, ministry schools, colleges, different things like that, being a fundamental Christian. And as that went on, as many people find, the more intense you are in fundamental forms of religion, the more likely you are to start hitting some of the limitations of fundamentalism, of black and white thinking, of these kind of rigid and extreme kind of views. And so I started myself to kind of deconstruct, and yet my whole world was still traveling and speaking. That's what I did. And so found myself doing that as I was traveling. What I spoke about started to shift and change. I mostly spoke about things I believed that were still probably helpful in that world. But I think people started picking up on that a little bit. And there's an interesting dynamic where when people start to deconstruct, it feels very dangerous to ask the people you love about some of the questions you have, or even the people you're supposed to trust, like your pastor or your leader or something like that. But the random guy that came to town that's staying in your house for night while they're speaking at your church that night, and you just heard them speak and you're like, phew, they're not coming back after that sermon. And also, that was some sketchy stuff he said. That was like really fringe. I'm going to ask him all my questions. Or people come up to you after the service and they go, I'm going to ask this visiting pastor a question that I wouldn't even tell my wife I'm thinking about this, because she might like leave me. It's such a fringe Christian concept or whatever for me to introduce, or such a core value to question. And so as I'm traveling and going through this journey myself, I realized, gosh, there's a lot of people in that space of Christianity, which was my world, so people deconstruct from all sorts of different backgrounds, that don't have people to process, don't have people to talk to, don't have a safe space to question, feel like they're completely alone, when actually, gosh, every other person it felt like when I was going to these places was had questions and was doubts and all sorts of different stuff. And so I felt myself find a bit more safety and going, well, actually, why am I spending all this time being another person within Christianity trying to help people be Christian when I've got a lot of questions on what it means to be Christian at that time anyway? Why don't I help people by saying I'm a safe person to ask questions? And gosh, that was, I don't even know, close to 15 years ago now. So, I mean, I've been doing this for at least a decade, just making space for people to ask questions, to explore in a non-judgmental way where they are free to be, to ask whatever they have, non-led. I have no outcome that I'm trying to get people to. I don't want people to believe what I believe. I don't talk about what I believe. I think it actually detracts from people figuring out for themselves. And yeah, I guess I could talk more about what that looks like, but broadly speaking, that's what I do. I just make space. It looks like chatting with people on Instagram and DMs. It looks like doing coaching or support groups. It looks like making online community space. All sorts of different things. It looks like making memes, having people feel seen, and then have conversations around some of the concepts around that, and all sorts of different stuff.
I know that Megan wants to get into one of the things that we, you know, consumed some content that early on when we started having conversations about having you on. Megan and I were both listening or watching through a podcast YouTube series you did on spiral dynamics, and the way in which you explained spiral dynamics, I think, made a lot of things make sense for Megan and I. Before we get into that, I'm curious to just touch on that element of you talking about, like, not talking about what you believe and creating a space within kind of the deconstruction conversation for people to just explore and ask questions. And I guess I want to ask you, like, I find that there's actually a lot of people who come into this space and then really look for something to cling to, or look for building some sort of new system or new, you know, I don't know, like there's a lot of that, like coming out of a cult and joining a cult phenomenon, the kind of like high control to high control environment pipeline that I see. Why is that? Like, why is it so common that someone can come out of a seemingly high control environment and start to question everything and then end up back in some other seemingly high control groupthink situation?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And I mean, it's a question for the ages, and there'd be a lot of people with different theories on what that would look like. We could look at something like development theory on how people psychologically grow and develop. You mentioned spiral dynamics. It's one type of development theory that focuses around how people see, value things, and the way that they orientate themselves towards their ideals and their values. So that can develop and grow, but you can also develop and grow in your ego, the way you see yourself, or you can develop and grow in your morality, the way you see your ethics and your moral compass. And so there's lots of different developmental theories out there, and they all are deeply insightful into how we go about the process of deconstruction, because often deconstruction is either sparked by quite a bit of developmental change or it sparks developmental change. And I think what you looking at with stuff like this is people tend not to go from fundamental to radically pluralistic, right? So you don't go from black and white and there's a right and there's a wrong and that's it to everything can kind of be true. I mean, it's all different perspectives and everyone's truth is ultimately from their subjective existential kind of perspective. Like, that's a very rare shift. I've personally not seen that happen. And if it does happen in an overnight shift, it probably is only because you weren't watching very closely. I guarantee that person took a long time. And even when we feel it was overnight ourselves, I guarantee it wasn't overnight. I guarantee bits and pieces, bit by bit, were whittling away and slowly things were coming into alignment where we could start to see things differently. And so I think a bit of it is that where actually maybe you look at it a bit closer and you go, it's probably not quite as fundamental what they've gone into, but it's still quite rigid. It's quite structured. It offers a lot of safety and certainty for less autonomy and freedom. But there's more autonomy and freedom than the place they came from. And so I think part of the time you're looking at just gradual change. And that's part of the process. And sometimes people need to realize that it's fundamental thinking that it's the problem. It's not just Christianity. It's just not just Islam. You know, so they maybe have a problem with fundamental Islam and then they become a Christian, but they're equally fundamental. Or you have a problem with one type of fundamental Christianity, so you're a Southern Baptist or something, and then you go into a very rigid, different type of Christianity. I'm not going to name another denomination. Pick one, whatever you want. And maybe over time, they might not even, and this is an important aspect, it's not about leaving religion or spirituality. Like, maybe they become a different form of Christian that just is much less fundamental, like a progressive kind of space or a much more open space, at least. Generally, the shift in deconstruction, there's kind of three markers of deconstruction. The third one is that you tend to hold your new beliefs with less fundamentalism. And so you're going to see that shift away from dualistic, black and white, right, wrong, in, out, good, bad. That sort of thinking starts to really loosen up. The black and white becomes more gray. But if you've become very gray over time, you might look at someone at the beginning of that journey and go, I was never that black and white when I first came out or whatever. And maybe there's a bit of selective memory in how the process was for you. Maybe you were much quicker at getting into a more gray expression or way of seeing the world. But more than likely, you probably were still whittling away some of that fundamentalism and just were doing it in that space still. And you were just very uncomfortable. And maybe this person left sooner and they're trying to find something that still makes them feel comfortable in quite a fundamental way of seeing the world. That'd be my kind of broad strokes. If you were looking at something like spiral dynamics, I'd say they're still in that conventional space. They're maybe only starting to tiptoe into some of the later stages, and they still need safety, certainty, security. Those are the values and the things that their psyche needs to feel comfortable. And so they come out of a space that offered them safety, certainty, security through an authority figure, through something like that. It's very common at that stage for you to look at that. And so for conventional Christians, it's, I get that authority is the Bible, is the pastor, is the Pope, is God. And that person thing tells me this is the right way, this is the wrong way, do this, don't do that. You'll be safe. You have certainty. You know you're going to go to heaven. You know you're not going to go to hell. And they leave that. And of course, there's suddenly a, oh shit, I don't feel very safe. I don't feel very certain. I don't feel very secure. So if they still have a drive to need that, they're going to, for them to even begin to shift out of that space, they're going to need to find something that offers them that. And they're going to look to an authority figure. And that is exactly why I don't tend to talk about my beliefs and my personal journey, because they may well try and replicate that. There's nothing wrong with people in this space talking about those things. But it's important that people recognize that's what they're doing. You know, they're representing a type of deconstruction. They're not representing what deconstruction is and how to do this, which a lot of people want. That's what they want. They want a clear path and a black and white way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's interesting that you present it that way, because I definitely, when I first came across, I think it was when you were on John Steingart's podcast, and I first came across that, and I remember I was shopping at Costco, and I remember like where I was when I was listening to that conversation, because at the time I was definitely in that place of, I need a new set of rules. Like I had the rules that I followed in evangelicalism, and now I feel like I'm left without a script, and now I need my new script and I need my new set of rules. And so as you went through like the overview, which I would love for you to kind of give an overview for our listeners of spiral dynamics, I felt like what I was looking for, like, this was so much better than Rules because it was more of a framework that I could kind of think about and consider. And again, it wasn't prescriptive, and I felt more comfortable with that. And I felt like, okay, this, like, and it also wasn't like a prescribed journey, like you need to go through stage one, stage two, stage, it was just kind of like a framework. So if you could give that overview for our listeners, that would be amazing.
Sure. So we'll stick with Spiral Dynamics, but like I said, there's lots of different models. So in Spiral Dynamics, it looks at the way that how you orientate yourself as you grow and develop with your values. And you'll notice that this works out in multiple different ways. It can work out in an individual just growing up. You'll see some of the early stages represent a baby, going into a toddler, going into a young child. But they also represent culture and society as it's grown and developed. And so there's a lot of different ways that this can play out. And it is very helpful looking at how we orientate our world around spirituality. We can see how it shifts and changes as well. And the whole principle behind developmental theories is that, generally speaking, people follow a pattern of growth. And so you can see this in children. You look at a child early on, they have very little concept of much of anything. It's a very magical, egocentric kind of way of seeing the world. And we all know that when we have babies and then when they become toddlers, they become kind of egomaniacs where they suddenly discover I'm a me. Oh my gosh, I don't have to do what you say. I can just scream no over and over and over again. And we all think that person is terrible, or we think they should run the US. Depends. Again, this doesn't just apply to toddlers.
Could go either way.
But don't grow up. So, you know, we see these developments, and then as time goes on, that toddler becomes a small child and they start to realize, me yelling, me, no, no, no. People don't seem to really like me that much, and it doesn't always work for me. Maybe it would work more to work in this system, and actually maybe mom and dad know more than me, and maybe sometimes their reasons, even though I don't understand it, because I say so actually is probably good enough, and actually that makes sense. I'll just do it because mom and dad say so. They know better. And so there's these developments. And what's interesting is you don't leave the prior developments, right? The young child that started to use the potty and understand and control their body doesn't stop doing that, hopefully, at least for a very long time. The child that's yelling no, 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 and learning that they're an individual person that can assert their desires doesn't stop doing that just because they grow up and start operating better in a community as a family. They still understand now that I'm a me, I can put forward my case, and maybe they do it in a bit of a healthy way. And so these stages build on each other. They don't replace each other. I think that's a really important distinction. So all that to say, we see these models in lots of different ways. Spiral Dynamics is about values. And so what you have early on, and we'll probably start around what would be similar to the kind of toddler stage because we're talking about spirituality. But generally speaking, this stage would be called red. Spiral Dynamics picks colors because titles are often very loaded. People grab onto titles and decide whether they're right or wrong. If you are going to give it a title, I would give it the title maybe like power or control. And again, you think of that toddler, they're learning, I have power, I have control. If I hit something, if I bite someone, if I say no, if I scream, I might get my way and I want my way. Religion often looks like that, and you think of the Crusades, something like that, very sort of like black and white, power driven, our way is the right way, we're going to destroy anyone that's different, that sort of idea. That, generally speaking, doesn't work very well because other religions want to destroy you, and it's probably more beneficial to work in a more harmonious way. It also doesn't work internally, where you have this like harsh dictator that's screaming no, 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 no in the religion, because it's only so long before someone else picks up a bigger stick, bonks you on the head, and becomes a new pope, right? So it doesn't work very well to be in that kind of way of thinking. It also is very upsetting for most people at that stage. Don't get to be in charge. And it's actually quite scary and it's quite problematic for them to live in that kind of space in that religion. So generally speaking, that evolves into a way called conventional. And the color in Spiral Dynamics is blue. Conventional just means it's kind of normative. It's quite comfortable. It's what we were talking about earlier. It seeks safety, certainty, and security. And so it's giving up some of that drive for power so that actually it has a bit more safety, certainty, and security. Because the mob boss might be powerful, but he's very rarely safe, certain, or secure, right? Because there's always someone else that's ready to whack him, right? That sort of mentality it opens up a whole new world, and it does open up culture to all sorts of different wonderful things. And so it's a positive thing. And it was very good for religion as well. It opened up a much more unified, embracive, everyone being a part of something, everyone being able to take part and be involved. It also, however, asks people to give up a lot of that autonomy. And so autonomy, we think of maybe in a slightly healthier way than being able to hit people on the head and take control or yelling at people till they do what you want. But it does require people to take up less space in the room. And we think of, maybe many of us grew up in that kind of conventional fundamental faith. There wasn't much autonomy. There wasn't much freedom for most people. The pastor, the leader, the God, they take charge. They operate in this space. And so there's a desire for safety, certainty, security that gives up a lot of things. And part of that even is often rational, intellectual engagement. A lot of people can be extremely smart, but check that at the door so that they can remain part of this community and accept what the pastor, what the leader says. Generally speaking, people start to hit a wall though. They start to realize, well, this is nice. I feel good having safety, certainty, security, but actually I'm giving up too much of me. And I actually wonder, what does that look like for me to exist and take up more space in this world? And actually I'm starting to think about things in new ways, and I'm starting to think about things more rationally and logical. And so this opens up a door to the next stage, which is orange, which often is quite an individualistic stage. And it looks at, like, what does it look like for me to be something myself and create something for myself and be myself and think for myself. This doesn't get rid of authority, but it also starts to use some logic and think about authority. A good example I might give is someone at stage blue might go into a pandemic and hear about COVID and hear about a vaccine, and they would go to their pastor and go, should I get a vaccine? Right? Because that's the authority figure. Maybe ask someone, what does God say I should get, or whatever. Someone at stage orange, unless they're like a professional and very smart about these things, is still going to go, well, I don't really understand this stuff. I mean, we all understand it a lot more now, right, on the other side. But I don't really understand this stuff.
Yeah.
So they also are going to seek out someone to give them advice. But they're going to go, you know who I'm not going to go to? A pastor. Like, unless, like, I mean, like, where did they get their pastor's license? A medical uni? Like a medical college? It's unlikely, right? They're probably not the expert here. I'll go to an immunologist. I'll go to my general practitioner and ask if they have advice or whatever it might be. I'll look at the Surgeon General's advice online or whatever it might be. But they're going to look at authority in a more nuanced and careful way. And so there's a lot more, there's more nuance in the way that they're approaching things. And again, this isn't better or worse. It's just developing and growing and seeing the world differently. And so we can go on to further stages. Stage green goes beyond that, and it starts to realize that there's limitations to being very individualistic and very focused on our autonomy and growing in that way. And it starts to go, well, that's good, and I don't want to give that up, but actually maybe I could be a bit more inclusive and have more community and more and maybe make some sacrifices of my personal life so that I can be a part of a broader community, or so that maybe even people beyond myself are benefited, right? Maybe me getting all my ways harms someone in a different country. And so people at earlier stages don't think about people in other countries. They don't think about people that don't look like them. They don't think about people in, you know, the next town over or in a different denomination or church or religion. We think of our group. And so often as you go through these stages, you see the world becoming a bit more inclusive. It's becoming more nuanced. It's becoming more gray. It's becoming less black and white and fundamental. You've got all these kind of shifts going on as people grow. A really good model for this, actually better than spiral dynamics in a lot of ways, would be Suzanne Cook-Greuter has an amazing piece on ego development and the way that we see ourselves as we develop and grow. Mm. It's really interesting. And so I'd recommend readers start there if they're more into reading. She's got a great 90 sort of page paper that's very accessible that is really interesting on that as well. But yeah, there's loads of ways this can play out. We touched on it earlier when we were talking about kind of some of these things of why do people come out of fundamentalism and still kind of stay into that. Well, it's part of this process. They're maybe still very blue. They're maybe starting to see some orange develop, and people very rarely are all one thing or another. I've seen people that are very orange, very rational, very logical, very driven. They're maybe scientists or doctors or something that requires an incredible amount of rational ways of engaging with the world are really rooted in science, not rooted in maybe an authority figure just telling you that's the way it is. And yet they walk into a church on Sunday, they sit down and lead their home group, and they disconnect from that way of engaging with the world, or they redefine it so much that it basically becomes blue again. And so people have these things in very different areas of their life. I've seen people that can be quite developed in some ways, and then maybe because of some trauma in their early years, the way they engage relationally is quite stunted. Or maybe they sexually engage at very early ways because they had prior experiences in the past that weren't healthy for them or whatever, and it's caused them to kind of hunker down at earlier stages. And so there's all sorts of complexity here. And so we're doing a very broad strokes to a very complex world of the human psyche and how we grow and develop in that. But yeah, I mean, I guess it's probably better for me to stop rambling and you can kind of pick what you want and what seems relevant or not from that. And there's stages beyond that as well. And we could go into that, but it might not be as relevant to this kind of process and what's going on for many people at this stage.
So one thing that I'm curious about, and Megan, feel free to push this in a different direction too, but like one of the conversations that I'm seeing happen a lot at this current moment in, you know, specifically the vein of deconstruction that I tend to float in and out of, which is obviously Christianity, right? And you mentioned before, you know, people can be coming out of, and we've had people on the show who are coming out of, traditional fundamentalist Judaism or Mormonism, you know, or other sects. But there is this apologetics movement that is learned about deconstruction and are now, you know, creating counter deconstruction arguments and, Elisa, I believe, and I don't, I always mispronounce her name and I apologize, Childers, mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a couple other, I think that her and somebody else just wrote a book, called The Deconstruction of Christianity or something like that. Mm-hmm. And framing this idea of deconstruction in this very particular way and creating a apologetic and a counter apologetic essentially to that. I'd love to hear your thoughts on like what's happening there. And yeah, I won't even go any further. Just like what's happening there and how you think about it and respond to it.
Well, I was interviewed for that book. So I think their publisher told them you have to actually get some data. So one of the things I do on the side is research. So I do research on deconstruction. I've got a lot of research, a lot of data available. And I think they were like, oh, crap, if we have to get some data on this, we probably need to research it. So they actually, well, at least they talked to me for a little bit, for an hour or so. From what I understand, none of what I gave her made it to the book. And I think that says all. Where I think certain people are at a stage where they realize this is the conversation and this is the type of conversation that's happening. And they can mimic the type of conversation, but they can't engage at that level. And that's not to throw shit all over any of these people. I mean, that's just the way they're seeing it and the way they choose to represent it. But I gave them really good data on, well, deconstruction doesn't mean that. It means this, or this is a definition of deconstruction from a research background of like what we've observed in 97%+ of population. We can see that this is what deconstruction looks like and means. They don't like it. So what do they do? They share what works for them, what they're doing. And you see this in apologetics, right? Go watch an atheist and a Christian argue and you're just like, oh, Jesus Christ, it's painful. I mean, it's painful on both sides a lot of the time, but it's especially painful sometimes when you're watching, I don't know, someone trying to explain why there's kangaroos in Australia and after the flood, or, you know, I mean, you're just like, well, you think you're having this very scientific conversation right now, but you're using Bible verses and that's just not really coming across the way you think it is. And so I think sometimes it's just people are trying to engage with people in a way that they think is going to be helpful and it's not. And again, it's really difficult when we talk about things like developmental theory, not to sounds like we're putting down people at an earlier stage. And it's really difficult to do that. It's really difficult to talk about your child and something funny they did because of their developmental stage right now. And most of us can appreciate, well, yeah, of course, they're at that stage. It's fine. But even that, it's like, well, they're at that stage. Is that because it's worse than us or inferior in some way? And I would say no. Like a seven-year-old isn't inferior to me. They're just at a very different stage. I was there and I go through that and I went through that and I hold on to most of that. But I would akin it to that really in a lot of ways, which sounds really awful. I feel bad saying it, but it's a lot like when you're 10-year-old tries to mimic something they're hearing adults talk about and you watch it and you go, that sounds similar, but my God, is that like kind of really funny? Because they don't really know what they're talking about. They're trying to mimic something they've heard or something like that. I feel bad. I feel a little bit bad there because, yeah, but I mean, I've been sent snippets from a few people that I'm not going to read that kind of time to read it. But I've sent snippets from people of how they define certain things. And I'm like, I told them the exact opposite to that. And I gave them links and I gave them the data and I told them they have free access to the actual cold, hard data. All the data that we do is the actual data that is available. And I guess they don't care. They don't think they care. They want to, it's a difference of, this is what you see apologetics. The atheist and the Christian aren't there to have a conversation or to learn. Neither wants to learn. They're there to listen so they can find a hole so they could then attack it to present their argument. And I think that way of engaging is so uninteresting to me. It's very hard for me to remember when that was interesting. It probably was at some point. But I think that's the way, I think if we remember ourselves as Christians, that's how we went. If we went out on the street and talked to people, right? We pretended we were open to hearing about them and their beliefs. So can I ask you a question about what you believe about God or whatever? I don't give a shit what you believe about God, mate. I want you to believe what I believe. And I'm just going to listen to whatever you say. So I've got the right opening and going, oh, there we go. I can get in there. And that's it. I mean, that's what the book is, right? It's how do I find deconstruction and find holes that I can then go, but this is what really is the case. And this is where they're wrong. And this is where they're wrong. And I don't even know what they're arguing because deconstruction isn't a thing, really. Broadly, apart from three vague categories, markers, which only if all three are present really is someone deconstructing. Even with a couple of them present, they're not necessarily deconstructing. I don't know what the fuck they think deconstruction is, right? Because it's not someone, it's not about what people believe. It's about an orientation away from something. It's not about an orientation towards something or even where they are presently. It's about a departure from fundamentalism. So what are you arguing about? You can argue with atheists, well, that's not deconstruction. It is deconstruction, but it's not deconstruction. So what are we doing here, right? You can argue about progressive Christians. Yeah, some of those have deconstructed, but that's not deconstruction. Only 20 to 30%, depending on a whole bunch of variables, end up still remaining Christian, which is a very large percentage, but it's not deconstruction. So I have a problem with anyone that decides to try and start a fight about, well, this is deconstruction or that's not deconstruction. I'm like, you're kind of like, I don't know, you're herding cats. Like, what are you trying to do here? I don't know.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that made me think of, because I think one, sometimes I'll get people that will send me a DM and be like, hey, I just started deconstructing. What books should I read? And I'm like, you know, that I have a lot of questions that I would need to ask you before I would ever be able to recommend a book, because there's so many different definitions of deconstruction. There's so many different journeys. There's so many things that people are unraveling. And so it's like you can't just kind of put together a book list. It really depends on what brought you into that space. Yeah. But then I think that the other piece is there's like this, I'm like, I started to lose my train of thought here. I had two things and that was one of them. I know. As you were talking about the frustration or trying to hold space for like people at every stage of the journey, I think there's frustration because then I think as people do get to a different space, there's so little patience for this, you know, the other place. Yeah. And so suddenly, you know, you might be like, okay, I'm trying to understand queer phobia and I think that's bad. And now I'm queer affirming. And like, actually now I'm queer. Like, and you've like gone through this, not, you know, and everybody looks different and that, you know, but then you see someone and you're like, you chose to use that word. How dare you? You chose to, you know, like, you're not using the language right. You're mm-hmm. doing this wrong. And there's people that are like, hey, can we have a journey? Are we allowed to have that? You know? And so as someone who said, like, I like to hold space for people, like, how do you navigate that dynamic of, like, you know, I like people that are like, I cannot talk to anyone in my life that isn't in this particular space. But yet, you know, there's mental health and boundaries when it comes to, you know, who's quote unquote safe or, you know. So mm-hmm. I think that yeah. those are just some thoughts as you were talking that I was thinking of. And you can feel free to take any of those any direction that you want.
Yeah. No, I mean, the second point is probably where I want to focus. But the first point, I would just say the question is not, you know, what do I read or what do I, is it, the question just immediately is reflected back as you say and say, what are you deconstructing? Because most people are even, mm-hmm. when they step in the space, they're not going, I'm deconstructing Christianity. Most people are desperately clinging to the Christianity, right? What they're doing is they're going, yeah. I'm not sure about this thing called hell, or my kid just came out as gay and I really want to start looking at that because I can't let go of my kid, but I can't let go of my faith. And are there options? And it's like, oh, cool. Read some books on queer affirming theology or, you know, whatever, right? And so it's, what are you deconstructing? Because yeah. deconstruction isn't about throwing everything out. It's about questioning core components of what you believe in your faith tradition, not being able to really provide an answer. And so you start to expand within your faith tradition or beyond to try and find answers to that. But the second point, I think, is I mean, it's bread and butter for life, right? I mean, I can imagine every person in this listen to this podcast is thinking of family members, different people that are at different stages, and they go, how do I engage with that? And maybe they don't want to engage with that, and maybe they shouldn't engage with that. We talk about mental health and things like that are very important. Boundaries, these sort of things are really important to set. And so that is a big immediate disclaimer across the top of, like, don't take what I say here for how some of these conversations could go to be, I should go and have those conversations. Because frankly, most of the time, even when you do a good job, they're going to go badly. Like, communication across these boundaries, across these, yeah. these barriers and these stages often go very poorly, even with everything at play. I think it's easy to see, again, if we look at children, right? You look at a five-year-old, right? And they're happy being a five-year-old and they're playing away and whatever. And then they become a six, seven-year-old and they look at their younger sibling that's five and they go, oh, I don't want to, no, I was never like that, or I don't like that. In fact, there's a great study on this. They did a study on small children. I think they were about two, and then they went back and did the study when they were about four. But at 2 years old, they got a tall, thin glass and a short, fat glass. And they filled the tall, thin glass with water and they poured it into the short, fat glass. And they asked the child which one had more water. And at two, they always pick the tall, thin glass. They always go, that has more water. And they literally watch the same water go back and forth and they still pick the tall, thin glass every time, which is, you know, whatever, right? It's like the kid that wants the biggest coin, not the one that's worth the most, right? It's just the way you think. They then at four asked the kid which one had most water, the same kids, and they all said, well, it's the same amount of water. So there's been development there, right? They've grown, they've changed. Then they showed them a video of themselves at two saying the tall glass had water. Every single child said, that's not me, and refused. They adamantly were like, nope, that's not me. And they're like, no, look, it's you. Look, I'll show you another video of you wearing that clothes, that outfit, or here, see you say your name at the beginning. Nope, that's not me. It's not me. They could not engage with the fact that at a prior stage, they believed differently than they believe now. And I think there's an element there you're talking about, right? You've gone through this journey where you've gone through such a radical shift. It's really hard to remember as a queer person what it was like to be queerphobic. But I'd wager if you were in a fundamental Christian space, on some level, you were going to be quite queerphobic in some ways and potentially in very harmful ways, if not just to yourself, right? And so it's very hard for us to do this. And therefore, and I think a part of this is actually it's projection of rejection of ourselves, right? We don't like accepting those that are at a prior stage because we were at a prior stage and it reminds us of who we were. And so actually our family that are a bit fill in the blank, racist, homophobic, you know, whatever, or maybe you just think they're a bit dumb because they believe in this thing that you don't really believe anymore. And it's just really dumb to believe in that. I don't believe that. In the same way that a kid might think it was dumb to believe in an imaginary friend, but they do now, right? There's obviously some interesting corollaries there. If you're an atheist or something, you might see yourself as having believed in an imaginary friend. And that's not comfortable. right? It's not comfortable thinking about, oh, I gave like, gosh, 30 hours a week of my life to like something I don't believe exists anymore or something I believe radically differently. It's a very hard thing. And so I think there's an element of projection there where we're rejecting our own path. And I think a big part of it is about integrating our own story. And so I think part of this journey is actually sitting down and going, how was I queerphobic? How was I homophobic? How was I racist? How was I fill in the blank, whatever it might be. I mean, these are big things, but there's little things here and there as well. How was I just a poor friend to that person in college because I kept trying to get them to come to church? Or what was that and where was that? And what's in there that taught me to be a better person? Some of it, it wasn't all bad, right? So some of the stuff we learned in church was a good thing. Maybe you learned to be a good public speaker because you spoke in church sometimes at home group. Or, you know, there's little things here and there that you can go, actually, there's some healthy stuff here, and I want to bring that forward. In the same way that a two-year-old wants to bring forward some autonomy, but they don't want to bring forward screaming no and biting people, hopefully. We're trying to pull apart some of that. And as I think we integrate our own self and our journey through some of these stages, we start to have compassion and see people as just someone on a journey, just like we were. And actually, they might not grow beyond where they are, and that's okay. It's okay. It's not what I would like, and I really am not happy about them being racist or something like that. And maybe we can work on that. We can work on that at that stage. That's a conversation of, okay, do we need to change how they think to change some of their values? I don't know if we necessarily always do. I think we might have to change our language, because they're not going to come to our stage. And the thing with the stages as well, if you think it's hard accepting who you were, imagine accepting something you don't think you're ever going to be and you think is wrong, right? Because when you're at that stage of conventional faith, you're at the last stage. There's no stage beyond being a fundamental Christian. Fundamental Christians have arrived. They are right. They're done. We're all good here. I don't need any input. Thank you very much, right? No, thank you. So they look at someone that's gone beyond and they immediately think they're behind. And you see this over and over again. See it so much as pastors go, oh, no, I know about deconstruction. I for a couple of years when I was 17, I drank and I did some stuff when I was a 17-year-old. So I know all about deconstruction. And they see your complex, nuanced, expressive, incredibly painful, certainly not by choice journey as something they did on a whim as a teenager because they were wanting to experiment. And because they can't see that there's something beyond where they are. They can't see that you were where they are. And I think there's a problem there as well. You'll see people, your family members start to try and reject your story and they start to try and alienate who you were as not like them. Because if you were like them, then maybe there is something after. And I don't like that because I want to be right here where I am right now. So now I need to change you so you were never where I am now. You're somehow back behind me. So it's really complex having a conversation, trying to pull people forwards in growth. You can't do that, right? A teacher doesn't get a seven-year-old to understand advanced mathematics by sitting down and teaching them university-level math. They teach them the math that the seven-year-old needs to learn. And when they get to understanding all the stuff that a seven-year-old needs to learn at math, they'll progress naturally and go, hey, give me some of that eight-year-old stuff. I want to learn more. If they like math, I don't know, maybe they need a bit of encouragement. So I think it's a bit of that as well, where there's got to be a different way of thinking, where we go, my mom, she requires safety, certainty, security. I'm really into this rational stuff and I'm really into logic and I'm really into it making sense. That's not her gig. It's a bonus and it makes sense to her. She makes it make sense. But her gig is, how do I feel safe, certain, and secure? So how do I have this conversation differently where I value that drive, that need? Is there a way to do that? How do I have a conversation about racism or homophobia where I recognize that your ultimate authority is the Bible? Can we do that? I think that's very possible. I think there's many progressive theologians that are doing that, where they respect the Bible. Again, a lot of Christians would argue how much they respect the Bible. But there's ways to start people tiptoeing in that. In fact, my Spiral Dynamics series that I put on YouTube, it was like 15, 17 hours or whatever, was all through the lens of Christianity. For Christians that are growing and developing, and what could their Christianity look like as they grow? Because most Christians engaging with that at the beginning don't want to even think that the Christianity could be that different. So you're So I was giving them a platform of how can you grow? How can you develop without losing the things that make you feel safe, certain, and secure? If you're already an atheist or agnostic, or you're not that engaged in Christianity, there's much better spiral dynamics material than the one that I put out on YouTube. So does that answer the question? I mean, there's 100 ways we could go into that.
It does. And I want to correct something I said earlier, because I said there wasn't a progression and there is a progression. But I think that what made me feel so, what resonated with me at that time was I was very newly a progressive Christian. And at the time, I would see people say like, oh, I went through a phase of progressive Christianity, you know, and I would feel like my journey wasn't valid or where I was wasn't valid. And so the way that you phrased those different colors, I was like, okay, well, you know, each piece of that is valid wherever, you know. And so I think that that's what it was that I think was so critical. Mm. And that's more of a comment. And I'll jump to Cortland because I know you have some things you want, wherever always. You want to go too.
No, I think that there's, I mean, for sure there is like a progression, but I also think that it isn't necessarily linear. And it is, you know, it isn't necessarily dualistic, right? So there is this, my question I think would be that how do we navigate community or caring for cultivating community with a mindset of non-linear, non-dual, you know, awareness of people's movement between these different perspectives. And I think especially separating out and realizing like that for different people, we cannot, like, for different people, it's going to be very different, right? Like the more I started to realize about like my orientation and like I was like, I can kind of choose my orientation. And I used to be like, oh no, you can't choose. Like that was a core argument of my affirming theology. And then as I became like more aware of like my attraction and my bisexuality, I was like, I can kind of choose to be straight or choose to be gay if I wanted. And then people are like, you can't say that. Like if you say that, then that makes their argument, you know, and it's like, well, I'm different. And that's really dynamic. There's a lot of different aspects, you know, gender. We start talking about gender and people are like, oh yeah, I'm, you know, fluid. My gender is, you know, changing. People that are maybe transition to a binary gender in their trans journey and then end up going like, no, I'm actually on this non-binary, you know, section. And then it's like, oh, well, you can't say that. You can't say that you detransition from a binary gender because then you're going to give the right wing talking points and we have to fit into this aligned idea of what we need to be so that we can defend ourselves.
Yeah.
I think is the biggest thing. And I think that there's a lot of merit to that. People come into community spaces and there are those aspects of self-protection, like looking to mitigate harm, and then people trying to cultivate community go like, I don't know, this has just got really messy. And I've seen these communities sometimes implode or fall apart because they don't have this really rigid Pope that can make a rule and decide who's in and who's out.
Yeah, I mean, community is a very complex thing. There's an interesting corollary there to your evolving concept of what it means to be a gender, sexuality, different things like that, in that there's an element in deconstruction, people really struggle with that, where there's a perception upon them deconstructing now from all these people in a conventional space and a fundamental space, and they've got all these stories of you just did this so you can sin, or you just did this for that, or you're doing this for this or that. And then you live your whole deconstruction life going, how is this perceived by the people that are judging my deconstruction? And I'm representing this, or I want it to be valid. And your validity in your own skin is still dictated externally rather than internally, right? Your locus of evaluation is still, well, what do these people say? My parents, my friends, my church, my ex-pastor, whatever it might be. And so it's really fascinating how much this plagues these core conditions of and core components of just what it means to be human. go right through it all. Everything. We're doing this whole game constantly. But as far as community, I mean, it's a really complex thing. And we talk about fundamentalism. You're really talking, so the stage after green, we touched on green and we stopped. The stage after green is yellow. And that's the first stage where fundamentalism starts to really drift away properly. And so actually, we're talking about all these stages that come after blue, after conventional thinking. We've got orange and green and these amazing changes and growths and things that are occurring for us in self-discovery and beginning to operate better and be more inclusive in our community. And yet, they're still quite binary in their thought. And you see this consistently. You see this with right-left talking points. You see this with whatever it might be. Pick a group of people that you think are progressive and you think are more conventional, and you'll see them both bicker and fight and exclude. And you know, you talked earlier, Megan, about, like, is there space for a journey? Is there space for a journey? And I think one part of this is that question, is there space for a journey? And I think a lot of people, if they can articulate that and say, hey, I probably am, I mean, and I'll put my hand up here, I've not properly decolonized fully. I've not figured out what that looks like for me entirely. I've been on that journey for a while and I'm working on that, but I don't know what that looks like to operate well in that perfectly. And I think me saying that as an introductory and then going, there's a really high chance I'm going to fuck up here somewhere. My Black, Indigenous, people of color friends are going to be way more open to me having a journey and making mistakes because they know I am at least trying to be on a journey. That's a very different conversation than your Uncle Terry at Thanksgiving who goes, well, I don't give a fuck about Dick. Yeah, what are you even talking about? I just sound stupid. So, you know, like, and it's just some more racist stuff. And you're like, yeah, there's no journey here. There's no intent on a journey. So you're immediately polarizing and going to have that fight. That's going to be fundamental, you're wrong, fundamental, I'm right. Bash, bash, bash. But when someone comes to the table and goes, look, I'm coming from this fundamental place where I thought it was right and I know that was wrong. And I want to be where you are. I don't understand it. I'm not sure how to get there. There's probably a lot of steps. And honestly, I'm going to probably fight it at times as well because it really hurts and it's painful. And I appreciate if you give me space and a bit of compassion as I do it. And I know it's not your job to manage my life and do it for me. That's certainly not anyone else's job. But yeah, is there space for that? I think a lot of people, as they've developed and grown, are going to look at that and go, I went on that journey too. Yeah, there's space for that. And so I think a big part of it is recognizing growth and journey. And that's a big part of stage yellow, is it starts to see life as developmental and as stages and as progression. And it starts to recognize that actually, I am all those stages too. And actually, when I talk to someone at stage blue, there's no point in being yellow. There's no point in being green. There's no point in being orange. Why don't I go and just be blue with them? Why don't I go talk about what feels safe, certain, and secure to them? So again, I'm doing all the stuff that they value, but I'm bringing my healthy later stages where I've let go of colonization, I've let go of racism, I've let go of homophobia, I've let go of toxic views of God, abusive views of God, so I can sit with you and talk about the Bible and maybe create some space for that to shift some of your views. Now that is some, like, hardcore radical ways of engaging with the world that I don't know about you, I'm like, God, I don't even know how I even talk to Uncle Terry, right? I have no, like, I just want to punch the guy. Like, I just want to shut up before Thanksgiving. So it's not easy. But I think as we grow and develop, we start to understand a little bit more and have more space for that. It's my wife's a teacher. I have no flipping clue how I teach a six-year-old about numbers because I'm just like, well, it's easy. Like, just add them. Like, it's not that hard. But they don't even know what a number is. You know, six-year-olds probably do. But they're barely actually fundamentally. They're just parroting at that stage. And they just know this plus this is this. They're not really engaging with some of the concepts of actually engaging with what does it mean to count? What does it mean for progression in numbers and representation? So her having a teaching degree allows her to step into that stage and meet them there. And she's bringing a whole world where she goes, well, of course, this isn't actually how it works. Or of course, this isn't the end game here, but I'll teach you the basics and I'll be where you are. I think it requires some of that for us to really start to see a healthy, thriving community. Now, in saying that, I think broadly speaking, as we develop and we grow, community still needs to be, generally speaking, with people that are in the same sort of stages that we are, if it's going to function for a while, a long while. I don't think much of society are anywhere near stage 11. Stage 11? Yellow is what I meant to say. I don't know what my brain did there.
This one goes to 11.
I'm creating my own numbered system there. That's way too hierarchical. But I, generally speaking, I think they estimate maybe sort of 10, 11% of the, I'll work with US. I know you guys are over on that side of the world. The US population are maybe 10 to 15%, maybe. That's very generous at sort of stage yellow. So the odds of us having this utopian kind of space where people at all sort of stages really operate well and not, and exist in that space, it's not likely to happen. People that are stage green are going to want to hang out with people that are stage green. They're going to want to do their embracive, inclusive, progressive stuff. Like, they're going to want to do that with other people that are in that space. And that's okay. And it's probably really beneficial for you if you're at that stage that you don't have Uncle Terry come and hang out. Right? Because he's going to shit on your parade, right? Send him back to be at home and watch Fox News and yell racist things at the TV. That sounds like a better place for Uncle Terry, honestly.
And I think that it's okay for those communities and those environments to be transitional and seasonal, I think is another thing that just goes against a lot of like the eternal mindset of like, you know, your church family is forever, your platonic family, you know, marriage is forever. All this eternal language that went around the structures of community that I grew up in. And now I'm like, right out of leaving Christianity, for me, it was the Bernie Sanders campaign. And I was like, yeah, I need another grumpy Jewish socialist to follow. Let me just go with Bernie instead of Jesus for a second. And then that was a phase for a minute, right? And then it was, you know, Dirty Rotten Church Kids was a huge community for me for like a couple years where I met incredible people. And, you know, listening to Adrian end that series, that, you know, and say like, I'm excited to like not be the Jesus guy for a minute and figure out who the fuck I am. Go on to something else. And it just goes against, I think, a lot of the ways in which we saw community as being this thing that needed to last forever, or it was like meaningless.
Right. And this is, so I created, so I constantly have people coming to me and going, I'm completely alone. You have no idea. I'm in fill in the blank, right? And it's always nine times out of 10, it's a Southern state, because apparently everyone that's deconstructing is in the South, but they're especially alone because it's a very religious place. Seen the largest drops in evangelicalism in the last 10 years. But it's funny, people would message me and say, oh, you've no idea what it's like. I'm in someplace in Georgia and it's like, I'm completely alone. Everyone's so religious and I'm the only human that's deconstructing on earth, it feels like. And I'm like, my DMs, just this week, I've talked to like 10 people from like just your city, like never mind all of Georgia or never mind you. Like, there's something here. Like, and the truth is, if you look at the data, I mean, the amount of people walking, and so this isn't deconstructing, this is just leaving Christianity. Leaving Christianity, there's more than 1 million people every year in the US averaged out over the last 20 years. And some years that's as high as 3 million people. That's like, that's a 1% of the US population in 1 year going, eh, I'm not a Christian anymore. And also that's 1% of the US population. That's way higher than 1% of the actual Christian population. That's like 2, 3% of the Christian population going in 1 year. Nah, not Christian anymore. Staggering amounts of people. And I say to people, I'm like, if you got embodied your inner Jehovah Witness, right? It might trigger you a bit. You went out your door, you turned left, you knocked on a door and said, hey, I'm questioning all sorts of stuff about my faith and I have no idea what I believe. You know anything about that? They might say no. All right, keep knocking. I don't think you get more than 10 doors without hitting someone that's going through something like this. Honestly, I really don't. But the problem is, if I'm Baptist and I start questioning that and I become a bit more charismatic, right? What do? I open up Google and I type in charismatic churches in, I don't know, Austin, Texas. And I'm going to find all the charismatic churches. I'm going to start church hopping and going, oh yeah, this one works for me, and I'm finding people that are like me. If I start questioning my faith, what the fuck do I type into Google to find people? Genuine question. Mm-hmm. Especially if I don't know what I am, right? It's different if I'm like, oh, I've become humanistic and atheist. Okay, well, there's humanistic atheist churches all over the world. Maybe you type in that and that's something. Or go on meetup.com and you might find some sort of atheist society or something like that. Or maybe you become Satanist, or maybe you become agnostic, or maybe you become whatever, but there's something to search. But if you're just generally like, I don't know, I know what I am. Maybe I'm so Christian. I really don't know. What do you type into Google? It's such a complex thing. And yet your whole world is, this is how I get my entire community, my safety, my security, my social structure is built around what do I believe? So I'm going to replicate that. But what do I believe? And who believes like me? And so anyway, so in time, I created this space online, deconstructionnetwork.com, completely free. You sign up, you can put in a pseudonym or your real name or whatever you want. And then you just put in your city, your state, your country, and it just puts a dot on the map. And then people can search, show me 50-mile radius of Austin, Texas, and then 100 dots show up. And it's like, holy crap. And you start clicking on it, and you can message people. Totally safe, anonymous, whatever. You can do what you want with a message. You can meet up someone, coffee. You can just chat with them, whatever it looks like. Don't get me wrong. If you meet up with someone, they might chop you up into little bits and, you know, hide you in the walls. I don't know. I can't be in charge of that. I'd wager probably not.
Yeah. Right? Legal disclaimer.
That's in the small print. They might chop you up into little bits. Probably not. Right. But who knows? You know, it's the internet. Same advice you give your 7-year-old. Don't meet people on the internet you don't know and don't trust. Zoom them at least first or something. But anyway, the point being, you find these 100 dots and, you know, and I had someone right at the beginning, they messaged me and they're like, oh, I'm in LA and like, I can't find anyone that wants to meet up and do stuff. And like, you know, I'm not sure. And I'm like, have you looked at the website? I'm like, it's early days, but it's like 30 people in LA. And they're like, yeah, I message every single one of them, but none of them wants to do what I want to do and like connect. And I'm like, okay, so what is that? And they're like, oh, I want to get together every week and have like a worship night at my house. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, and I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah, sure. But I'm like, but I can also see a lot of people don't want to have a worship night at some guy's house. Like, that's probably one of the bigger things that they're deconstructing or something, right? I don't know. Like, a lot of people, half the people deconstructing are worship leaders, right? And going, I don't want to do this anymore. So it really highlighted a point for me that I knew, but I hadn't really conceptualized, in that people are still trying to gather around what they believe and how they practice spirituality. But deconstruction looks like a whole mess of things. Even if you're in that 20 to 30% that remain Christian, that looks very different to a lot of people. But a whole bunch of people are agnostic. A whole bunch of people are spiritual, not religious. Some people go into sort of pagan kind of concepts. Some people go into other traditional faiths. Other people believe atheism or expressions of atheism like Satanism or things like that. Like, I don't know. Does the atheist want to go along to worship night? Probably not. Yeah. So that rules that guy out. But would you and the atheist really bond and be able to talk about how it was for you when you started questioning? And, you know, would that person be able to help you in process? And might they even be in a place where they're not going to try and make you an atheist, but they're just going to make space for you to have a conversation? Hopefully, yeah. I think most people would be semi-able to do that early on. And that could be really healing and helpful. And so community, I think the big challenge early on is a shifting away from we gather around what we believe and we gather around how we practice what we believe, to we gather around being human. And we gather around a shared origin rather than a shared trajectory or a shared current location. So we know what it's like to grow up fundamental and come out of that. That's what we have in common. Where we go, that's okay. We'll figure it out. And it's okay if we're different. And it's okay if we, a year down the line, go, we're so different, let's just call it a day. It's okay. Like you said, these things don't have to be permanent. When your whole fundamental outlook is this is it, we've arrived, there's no change, this is it. It's just gonna be this, God, it's this for eternity, right? Literally. Like, there's no room for people to diverge, right? So it's a really complex thing. It's a complex thing. And you look at a community like Dirt and Rocks Church, has had amazing Patreon, wonderful space, but you'll find that ebbs and flows, right? People come in and it's life. It's, oh my God, finally space to talk and share and connect. Mm-hmm. And people are just like me and it's so good. And then eventually some people don't move on and it's still great for them. And that's where they are. And it's just really helpful. And a lot of people go, I have this on my Discord server and my Patreon and stuff like that. Like, I'm like, thank God certain parts of my Discord are entirely, my Discord is a graveyard for a few months. And I'm like, oof. Not much going on. And I check in with people. How are people doing? I'm like, yeah, I'm actually doing really well. That's why it's a graveyard. They don't need this space. They don't need to talk about where they've come from. They're enjoying where they are and they're moving forward. And part of that is they have friendships online separate to Discord that they've made in that space and outside of that space. And another part of it is they're just doing other things. And but I think it's a totally different way of engaging with the world. But it's very difficult early on because our whole operation is I type into Google, you know, and I meet up with people that believe like me. And that's not really viable when you're going, I have no fucking clue what I believe. I think a deconstruction church would do well. That's... Like, I'm sure a bunch of people have tried them and started them and they've done well. And I bet you they go to shit very quick because people move beyond it or they fight and bicker because they've come to different conclusions.
Yep.
It's so funny. Yeah. And we're actually doing an event in a couple weeks here that are pulling together some people in the Portland area, but and looking at kind of doing some in different regions because we want to do one in Atlanta too, just because it is an area where mm-hmm. lots of people and are looking for that community. So
yeah,
we've kind of started.
By the time this airs, it will have happened and it will have been a huge success.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Well, we're kind of getting to time here, but I feel like we could talk for hours and just, you know, hear more of your brain and all of that. But unfortunately, we're out of time. But I would love for you, you mentioned a couple places. You mentioned Patreon. You mentioned your website. Where can people find you and support your work and really see more of what you're all about? I know you have some killer memes, too, on your
all
Instagram
really
page.
All that really matters is the memes. So Instagram is the best place to connect with me. I'm remarkably busy these days. So I'm studying to become a therapist. We just had a baby. Like, there's lots of stuff. We just moved like 3 times in the last year. So like, there's a lot going on. But if you're going to get some sort of conversation with me, I'm on Instagram regularly. I love to chat with people in DMs if they need to process stuff. If you need something a bit more intentional, I do have one-to-one kind of conversations with people. And I have sort of support group space. And then we also have a Discord online. There's a Patreon there for that. It's like $1 or something. It's the cheapest Patreon there is. It's there to stop like a pastor joining or something and trying to evangelize to everyone more than anything else. But yeah, you can join that. If you can't afford $1 a month, please contact me and I'll let you in for free. That's probably the best place to start is Instagram. So it's just my name, Phil Drysdale. I'm sure it'll be in the show notes and wherever. And my website, PhilDrysdale.com, if you want to do more kind of working with me. And then the deconstructionnetwork.com. We didn't talk about any of the research that I do, but that's a good space for connecting with people, as I mentioned, but it's also where a lot of our research is posted. And I'm also really behind on that because my head is barely above water most days. So I've not really been focusing on that as much. So there's a lot of research we've yet to publish that's largely done. It just needs to be kind of mostly typed up and put online. But that's where to find research and stuff as well. And so if people are looking into things and want data and things like that, I am a world of numbers and facts and figures. I love that stuff. So yeah, by all means reach out and I can potentially provide data and stuff. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much for making the time. And yeah, as somebody who I've been following for, like you said, like, feels like maybe a decade. I don't know. It's been a long time. It's really great to be able to sit down and spend this time with you and looking forward to having others connect with you through this, this interview.
Well, so, thanks for having me, guys. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Really enjoyed it.
You know what I love about Phil is
his accent.
I feel like he had there's a lot that I love about Phil, but he has the researcher in him, and he presents the data and the research in a very specific way. And the thing is, like, I feel like you and I and a lot of people, even on Twitter or Instagram, have a lot of conversations about this, like, kind of deconstruction influencer culture that's happening. But Phil mm-hmm. has been around for a really long time, and he lives and breathes this stuff. He's not just somebody that woke up yesterday and was like, you know, I think I'm gonna, like, kind of, you know, make something happen in this world. He's somebody that's really been a solid force in this and just kind of watching things happen and been supportive and somebody you can reach out to and DM, and he's right there and he's like, yeah, I'd love to help you find community, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the people who come from that, like, research background, you know, similar to people who come from a more journalistic background, right? Like, you know, Sarah, who wrote The Exvangelicals. And I even think about, like, Blake, and, like, Blake's, like, always kind of approached his Exvangelical podcast from a very journalistic, like, hey, I'm trying to, like, really get people to tell their stories and ask these questions, not presenting a rhetorical argument with, like, very clear rhetorical goals, but trying to really look at the data. I think about, like, Dan, oh my God, how did I forget this man's last name? McClellan, Dan McClellan, Dad Over Dogma. You know, Dan is on TikTok. If those of you who don't know who he is, he's a Bible scholar, and he's doing, you know, he's looking at the data. He's looking at the actual facts of the Bible, of, you know, what scholars are saying, and not, you know, coming from a position of having, you know, these really specific rhetorical goals. And Phil is that same way. He doesn't really talk about his personal beliefs. He's really talking about this phenomenon that's happening, and it really validates the voices that he's able to, you know, elevate through his work. So I love that too.
Yeah, 1,000%. Well, I think that with that, hopefully you enjoyed that interview, and check out Phil's work. He's a phenomenal guy, and puts that research at the center, not himself at the center. I think that's what the key is, right? So where can people find us, Cortland?
Yeah, I am all over the internet at Cortland Coffee. I'm the only one. If you Google me, you'll find me somewhere. Twitter is kind of where I'm most active, unfortunately, still. Instagram, I'm pretty active over there as well. And then the pod is Thereafter Pod on Twitter, and Thereafter Podcast on Instagram, as well as over at patreon.com/thereafterpod for those looking to join the Discord or help support what we're doing with the show. Megan, what about yourself?
I am at The Pursuing Life on Twitter. Currently, I have a private account, but you can send me a follower request. But it'll open up before too long here. But and
something go over there on Twitter sometimes, unfortunately.
Yeah, you know. But yeah, check us out in the Discord too. It's been a bit, and I love that community. And just yeah, let's connect. So thanks for listening.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, until next time, everybody.
Till next time.